Can you see it through that?
Now it is. That's what we had before.
So testing 1, 2, 3, testing 1, 2, 3.
Five. Okay, let's try this again. Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, January 12, 1987. Eleanor Bloom and Ann Fagan interviewing Leonard Littman on tape one, side one. Mr. Littman, would you state, please, your full name, your address, and your date of birth?
Leonard Littman, 5822 Walnut Street, Pittsburgh, Shadyside Section.
And your date of birth, please?
May 15, 1914.
Okay, let's wait.
Put down. What do they need to stay?
Here you are. It's recording.
Okay, we're ready now, Mr. Littman, to begin with you, and I'd like to talk with you, please, first about your childhood. So if you'll tell us, please, about your parents and your family and growing up.
My father was Harry, my mother was Sarah Miller. Children were born, there was three children born in North Braddock. That was Archie, Eugene, and myself. And my sister was born in Braddock, that's Ruth. And another brother was also born in Braddock, that's David.
Okay, so we have then your brothers and your sisters and you growing up in North Braddock. And
we were just born. We grew up in Braddock until we were in the first grade. And then we moved to Cleveland for 3 years. Came back to Braddock when I was in the fourth grade.
Ah, okay. And this would be in what year?
I'd say 1922, we came back to Braddock.
Okay, do you have any memories of what it was like to be a little boy in Braddock?
Well, there were three boys and a sister. And growing up in Braddock was in the middle of the Depression. And we lived on 4th Street next to Carmody Avenue. We went to Copeland School and lived an ordinary life. And my father got his first car, and it was a little better than the Cleveland experience, where my father had a grocery store, and he managed to provide, and we managed to grow up and. We moved after a year to Corey Avenue, where I went to school at Hamilton, which was next door to the house. We made it easy to get to school on time because as soon as the bell started ringing, it took us 10 minutes to get into class. And I stayed there and went to junior high school in Braddock, and then went in high school in Braddock, graduated from Braddock High School. It's where I first started writing. I was writing for the Daily News Herald.
What kind of writing were you doing?
I covered high school sports.
Aha, so you were a sports writer. Yeah. Had you been interested in sports earlier on?
Well, I was too, my brother was a big star on the football team, and I was little, and the only way I could get in the game was to do something, and I tried out for the band. And the only instrument that they had for me was a trombone, and I couldn't play that. So I had a knack. I was taking typing. A teacher named Miss Sheiky said it was a good thing to have. And so I learned how to type, and I was interested in English. And I found out I could write a declarative sentence, and I was interested in sports, and I liked it. I played Saturday baseball and touch football and things like that. So I went to the Daily News Herald and asked them if I could write about the high school. And they said, send something in. I wrote a few stories, and they were accepted. And when I was about a sophomore, I started covering the high school football in Braddock High School, and then I covered the basketball games. And then my senior year, the team won the WPIL championship. So I was writing about it all the time. And then during that period, there was a Myers Bowl was put up. It was a boxing arena where some of the great fighters of the world fought.
This was in Braddock?
It was in Braddock. Yeah.
Myers Bowl.
Myers Bowl. Mm. It was like fighters like Tony Canzanieri, Tom Heaney, who fought Gene Tunney for the title, Kid Chocolate, Benny Bass. Now, some of the greatest fighters are there. In fact, Henry Armstrong fought his only losing fight there when he fought under the name of Melody Jackson. And I covered those fights. And while I was there, in my senior year, I started covering high school football for the press and the Sun-Telegraph.
Now, was the Daily Herald the local paper in
Daily
Braddock?
Daily News Herald was a daily paper in Braddock. There were three papers there at that time. And the city had three papers, had seven theaters, and it was one of the most prosperous towns in the whole valley. And but I connected with the Sun-Telegraph and the press, and was covering the from Braddock to Elizabeth, all the high school football games for both papers.
This was while you were still in high school, you were doing this?
In high school and the year after high school when I wasn't able to go to college. We didn't have the money, and I covered the games, and I worked in a gas station. And on Saturdays, I would take five or six friends, and we'd cover the games, and I would send them all into the papers. I would stop at the Western Union in McKeesport and write the games up. And send them in.
So you had your own syndicated sports outfit there.
I got a dollar a game, and I gave each guy 50 cents.
Can you, that's a great piece of information. I would like to go back a little bit and see if you've got any memories of Braddock during the Depression as a young boy and watching your family getting by in Braddock. Memories
well,
of that?
I have clear memories of it. Braddock was, as I say, a very prosperous town, and getting work, you had, the mill was the only place that there was any employment, and to pay, you had to have political influence to get a labor job, which paid 33 cents an hour. And my father had some political connections, and the political boss there, it was John Borowski, and he got me a job in the mill, in the labor gang, and I was getting 33 cents an hour, and I was still writing for the paper. And
was that the standard amount that everybody earned, or were you low man on the
scale? Well, the labor gang it was 33 cents an hour. Mm-hmm. It was there was no union, and long before the CIO, and after 13 days, I decided that. That wasn't for me, and that was the last job I ever had. I never went to work again, except in the Navy, of course. But during that period, there was no, there was welfare, and they called it relief or something like that. Some families were on relief, but we never were. I don't know whether we needed it or not, but we always managed. And my older brother got a job, and I brought in a little money from the mill and from the gas station. But during the high school days and the growing up period, during the whole era, we found that we were able to manage, and we never actually knew that we were suffering because everybody was suffering. And our grandmother, we called Bobby, she was with us, and she used to somehow manage to give us each a quarter a week. And we sometimes would get a dime to go to a movie or a nickel to get an ice cream cone. There never was any lacking, and my mother managed them, and there was always food in the house, and the place was always warm, and we lived a very nice, comfortable life. And but when I went away to school, the Depression was still on. It was in 1933. I decided I couldn't get, I didn't have any money to go to college, So I went on the road with a couple of football players who had scholarships. And I went to the first school I went to was Roanoke. And I had grown then. My brother had already got to college. He went to Waynesburg on a scholarship. But he was like 180 pounds, and as I said, one of the best football players in the city. And I tried out for the Roanoke team, and they cut me.
You had been out of high school for how long?
One year.
Went off to college. So okay, so you were a little bit older than most the college freshmen.
I was a year old.
You would have been 19. Yes. Yeah.
So I cut in Roanoke. It was still, school hadn't started yet, so I was hitchhiking back to Pittsburgh, and I stopped off on the highway at a little school called Shenandoah. And some of my friends from Brannock were going to school there. And so I tried out for the football team. And the coach says, "I don't think you're going to make it. Is there anything else you can do?" I said, "Well, I'm a writer, I'm a reporter." He says, "Well, go see the dean. They're looking for a publicity man." I says, "Well," so I went to see the dean, and he asked me what experience I had. I told him I wrote for these papers. And he says, "Can you do publicity?" I said, "Sure." And he says, "Can you put out a paper?" I said, "Certainly, nothing to it." And he says, "Well, if you make the football squad, we'll give you a full scholarship. If you don't, it's going to cost you $75.
That was a year.
So I did real well with the paper and the publicity. I got them on a lot of stories in the Harrisonburg paper, which was the closest daily paper. And then I got a few stories in the Washington Post.
That was a big deal for a young man your age, wasn't it? These were all sports stories that you did?
When I was a stringer is one who writes for an out-of-town paper and he gets paid by the string by stringing up his clippings. And I did put a few stories in the Richmond Times-Dispatch, and I played on the basketball squad. So I got a full scholarship, and I stayed there for 2 years. Incidentally, I was the first youth that ever went to that school.
Hmm.
That school was started in 1875, and when I graduated, I was eligible for see, the ones who graduated from junior college were eligible for athletics. And I was recruited as an athlete, but only because they had me listed as an athlete at Shenandoah.
You said that you were the only Jew up to that point who graduated from that school. Did it create
any... The only Jew that was ever in that school.
Did it create any problems?
Oh, yeah.
What kinds of difficulties do you recall?
Well, I got thrown in a lake. But they never... they didn't know I was a Jew until it came up... in a conversation, and then they started looking funny at me, and they says, a guy came up, a good friend of mine, Dutch Zeller, he said, "Look, Benny," they called me Benny because there was a fighter at the time called Benny Leonard, and he says, "Benny, don't hold this against me, but there's word going around, you know, I'm your friend, I'll always be your friend, is it true, or are you a Jew?" I said, "Sure." And he just looked at me, turned away, and he came back again, faced me, and he shook out his hand. He said, "Well, I'm still with you, kid." So anyway, the word got around, and the funniest part of it was we were 4 miles away from Bridgewater College.
Where in Virginia?
That's Bridgewater, Virginia.
Ah, okay.
See, Shenandoah was in Dayton, Virginia. It was a Mennonite school, and word got over to there. Got over there that I was a Jew, and while we used to go over there and look at them because they used to go ride around in buggies and on Sunday sermons I was throwing fire and brimstone around, and they didn't believe in cars, and didn't believe in, neither school believed in dancing or smoking or drinking or anything like that. But the Mennonites made a point of coming over to Dayton with their friends and would point me out to them as the Dayton Jew. It wasn't the Shenandoah Jew, it was the Dayton Jew, because Dayton was the town. And in this school, there were ministerial students. There was 109 students. half of them were ministers, and the ones who didn't become ministers became teachers. So naturally, they all came from a United Brethren background, and they were all curious about Judaism and the Old Testament, which was a required study. You had to take Bible 1 and Bible 2. Bible 1 was the New Testament, and Bible 2 was the Old Testament. And we used to have long conversations about the relative merits between the Old Testament and the New, and arguments, things like that.
Sounds as though you didn't encounter as much prejudice as curiosity. Was it?
No prejudice at all. I didn't see prejudice. The following year, I went to Richmond. I didn't see any prejudice in Braddock, in any of the high schools, any schools I went to. I didn't see any prejudice in Shenandoah. I didn't see any prejudice in Richmond except the Negro prejudice. It was a very, very pronounced there. There was one boy was being kidded that his grandfather was a Negro, and word passed around the whole campus, and he felt so upset over it that he had to leave school. But
This was when, approximately?
This was 35.
35. And this was, you were in school in Richmond, Virginia at this point?
Yeah, see, when Shenandoah and I graduated, I was offered the job as a sports publicity director at the University of Richmond. That was a paid job, and I got room, board, and tuition and $1,500. And I had to run a news bureau, and that was a full-time job. And also was play a little basketball. But the job I had was right in the athletic director's office, and I just put out the publicity and ran the news. And on the weekends, I would go down to the Times-Dispatch and work on some copy or write a few headlines and get paid extra. And I worked for the United Press. I was their correspondent there for a couple of weeks when they first started the SO Marketers, which was the news that they put on the radio every time at 6 o'clock. And I got fired when I was following a real good story. It was Richmond joining the Southern Conference, and I was ready to grab the story, and I missed the broadcast, so I got fired.
Now, when you worked at the university as the news director, and then you were also working as a kind of stringer,
What
were there any stories that you remember as being particularly significant in those years? Any big news breaks?
Well, there was one big news break. I don't remember the particulars. There was a bus went off a bridge and right near the James River. See, in 1936, I remember it's 1936, it was St. Patrick's Day, that you had to flood up here. We had to flood down there. And one of the bus went off a bridge, went into the river, and I covered that. I don't know how many papers I covered it for, but I covered that in great depth. I remember very little about it, because when I come up here for the summer, and it was, since you had such a big problem in Pittsburgh, our situation was dwarfed by a colossal thing that happened to you.
What was your life like in Richmond as a young Jewish man? Again, very much of a minority, I would guess.
No, there was a lot of... this was first I discovered plateaus in Judaism. I was going with a girl, I think her name was Dean, and she was a very, very beautiful girl, very nice. And I was at her house, and I was invited to the country club. And then I was at her house. I said, I wonder if my grandfather in Russia ever saw such luxury as this. And I noticed icicles forming. And when I left, I noticed it was very cool toward me. And I went home. And I talked to a friend of mine who was a German, he was a Russian Jew. He also was a Russian Jew. And he said, what happened? I told him. He says, well, are you a Russian Jew? I said, yeah. He says, well, I am too. I didn't know you knew it. I said, well, what's the difference? He says, well, evidently they were German Jews. And he says, they ordinarily don't associate with us. And the Portuguese, and the Spanish Jews that were in Richmond, don't associate with them. And he says, they're all levels. He says, most of us thought you were, I didn't go much with the students. See, I was working in the office all the time. I was on sort of an executive level. And he says, we thought that you were related to the Lippmanns, who are English Jews. And, so this is the first time I knew that there was a difference. And then I did, later I saw that there was only one Jewish fraternity, but there was Jews of different backgrounds who stayed together. And this was, when I came home, I asked my mother about it, and she said that it was here in Braddock too, and she told me that there were certain German families. And she said, we didn't get any of the Portuguese or the Spanish up here yet, but we will. And the prejudice down there was not against the Jews, as much against the Negro. And then whenever I got the job to come to Pitt to promote their 150th anniversary, I come up here and I found out that it was on various levels. Even at Pitt, the fraternities were mixed, but
mixed in terms of
origin.
I see.
Well, I noticed at Pitt that there wasn't a Negro, and even when I went to law school, there wasn't a Negro. And this was the all the way through school. In fact, in Braddock High School, we had one Negro, and he was a very good football player. And the prejudice was existed in the extent of you would call an Italian a wop or a guinea. He in turn would call you a kike. You never used the word nigger because there weren't any niggers, but we knew they were segregated because they only lived on one street. It was called Center Street, and there was about, I would say, 40 families. Now, this was similar to what I found when I was on the tour with the circus, that every town in the South would have what they called a jig town. That was every city at the end of the suburbs and at the end of the city, there was a jig town, and where they would call it a nigger town. Or they had all kind of names for it, but this was complete segregation. And when we were on a circus, here again was complete segregation among the Negroes, but Jews were very much accepted on the circuses, but only in certain capacities, like if you were an acrobat, maybe a clown. The first place I saw a Jewish homosexual. He was a clown.
Let's back up. You've got so many wonderful happenings in your life that I'm just going to maybe stop you and chronologically pick up where we were. You were talking about working in Richmond in public relations. You left there to come to Pittsburgh to work at Pitt?
Yeah, they were having the 50th anniversary. And I was a senior in college. And I couldn't graduate from Richmond. They have very high standards there on math and language. And they offered me this job on the promotion of the 50th anniversary. They had a professional promoter, and they needed someone to help him. And I came up.
As
and,
a student then?
I came as a student to graduate.
Mm-hmm.
But I had this job, which I was paid for, and was like a tuition, room, board. And a fee, I don't recall the fee. And I worked with them for about 2 months. We got in a disagreement over a method approach. And he said, well, I can't use you. I said, well, okay, I still got my scholarship. I'm just going to graduate and forget about you. We argued over how to present the program. And I wanted to do something with Nobel Prize winners. He wanted to do something with graduates who had contributed to the university. It was more or less of an artistic decision. And it was a complete break off, where there was no going back. In fact, they asked me to do the publicity for the cap and gown. I told them I would if they paid me, and they said, we're paying you enough as it is. So as a compromise, I did the pit players publicity. And I felt that, and then I was already 22 years old, and I was an experienced public relations man, and I knew my business, and I didn't want to work as a student, and so I graduated.
And then after graduation, did you stay on in Pittsburgh?
No, I went to Hollywood. I was with the circus for about 4 weeks.
Did you get your job with the circus out of Pittsburgh, or did you just go kind of cold to Hollywood?
I was working whenever I got fired from this promotion job at Pitt. I was working at the Braddock Free Press. That was another paper in Braddock, and I was the sports editor. And one time, the editor, his name was Jimmy Ball, got sick, I think he was transferred to the McKeesport Daily News, and I was the editor then.
This was when you were 22 years old?
21, I don't know. But I was running the paper, and a press agent from Wallace Brothers Circus came in, and he told me that he had Hoot Gibson in town. Would I interview him? I said, I'm here all alone, I have no reporters. He says, please do this favor for me because it's my job depends on it. I says, who still remembers Hoot Gibson? He says, honest to God, he's selling out everywhere he goes. I said, if he's selling out everywhere he goes, why do you need his publicity? So anyway, I said, I'll try to. And so the next day, I was coming home. So I went to Pitt. And I was coming home from school to go to work. And I went past the lot, and I figured I might as well stop and see it.
What was the name of the circus again?
Wallace Brothers.
How big was it?
It was a small show. Hoot Gibson was the star. They carried about 100 people. It was a three-ring circus. In those days, tent circuses were very common. And I stopped and interviewed Hoot. And I got a good interview out of him. And I met his girl, and her father owned the circus. So I started dating her while I was, while the circus was in various towns around. This was Swissville, and then there was towns like Random, New Kensington, mm-hmm. Greensburg, all the cities and towns that they played, like in Monroeville, was then Patton Township, they played out there. So I was dating her, and after I graduated, I was writing, and she asked me to join the circus, her father owned it. And I stayed with the show for about 4 weeks, but three of my friends wanted to take a trip, and I came back. My father, who then was doing very well in the beer business, and the Depression was over. He was a big beer distributor. He was actually forced to go into the beer business because a friend of his had this Duquesne brewery, and he couldn't sell it for some reason. He asked my father to take the distributorship, and eventually became the family business. So he bought me a car for graduation, and so the four of us, seeing Irv Kaplan, Heller,
Jackie.
Jackie Heller came later, can't remember the other one. We drove across the California for a trip.
This was in what year?
37.
All
right. When I got there,
Did you intend to stay when you were there?
No, I'm sure I intend to stay. I want to get in the movie. I went for a job at Paramount. I got 1 or 2 days work as a guard. And that was the extent of my movie career. And I used to go to all the tests, like they had a call for a man, dark, 6'2". You would make the call, you would get a lunch, and I was hustling around. And
did you, during that time, meet any aspiring young actors or actresses whose names you
met? I met a lot of them. In fact, I met George Jessel, Robert Jolson. They wanted me to become a fighter. And Luby Velez, Toby Wing, And then John Merrimore was very close to her. Close, I guarded him for one night. He was doing a step and I guarded him. But I never had a job, I never made a movie. I was in a long line and was testing for Gone with the Wind, only because they were giving you meal. As Buck and Clark gave them, and Errol Flynn, and things like that.
How did you earn your living while you were there? Did you have other jobs?
Well, what I did is I would get down to the Main Street gym, and I would put on gloves and work out with a fighter, shadow boxing. And they would give you a buck or a buck and a half. And then I met a friend of mine from Braddock, a guy named Apples Myers, who owned this Myers Bowl.
The place you had talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
I think it's working.